Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast in association with GK Icon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, it's easy to do so at GK Union on Twitter, at GK Union Official on Instagram, search GK Union on Facebook, or you can drop us an email, hello@goalkeepersunion.net. It's me, Joe Forrester, here with Matt Beadle, and of course, the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee. Let's start this week talking about Alisson. He's someone we talk about a lot on the podcast, of course. Record signing for a goalkeeper, a huge piece of the puzzle of what's led to Liverpool's success this season. He was lauded for his midweek heroics against Napoli, but did make a mistake against Manchester United at Anfield, parried it to let United back into the game. A weak, limp-wristed parry which fell into the path of Jesse Lingard, who then went on to score for the Red Devils. Obviously, Liverpool went on to win anyway. Rich, your best mate Gary Neville wasn't happy about this. He said it was an easy one and Alisson should do better.
It makes me think of what Brad Friedel said to us a few weeks ago. You're never as good as you think you are. Similarly, you're never as bad as you think you are. That's one of the keys about goalkeeping. And I think we've seen that during the week. The save he made during the week, which got incredible praise. Jurgen Klopp saying he'd paid double what he paid for him. It was that good. Mm. The truth was, it was a very good save. It was more the emotion and what the save meant as opposed to the save itself. Like, would we put that save in the same bracket as David Seaman against Sheffield United or Peter Schmeichel against Rapid Vienna or Gordon Banks? Like, of course, you wouldn't. It's not of that level. Now, it was the perfect save at the perfect moment. What I mean by that, quick movement, spread correctly, executed the technique, gave himself the best possible chance of making the save, and that's exactly what he did. Similarly, this mistake he's made, is it a mistake?
Yes.
Yes, it is a mistake. Yes. Yes, it is a mistake. I'm not going to argue that it isn't a mistake. What I will say is that it's not a horrendous error. It's a ball that's been whipped in. It's a wet day. You can see afterwards he's looking at his gloves. Now, for me, yes.
His fingers are a bit cold.
See that you're both rolling your eyes. Okay.
You talk about this.
Every goalkeeper listening to this will have done a very similar thing where handling is that much more difficult when it's wet conditions. Okay. Mm. And today, this weekend, has been horrendous conditions for goalkeeping. It's no wonder that we've seen as many mistakes as we have in the last week, probably more in the last 2 weeks than we've seen all season when the weather does turn in the way that it has. Now, look, I'm not saying that Alisson's isn't a mistake, but there are mitigating circumstances.
But aren't you always saying, okay, safety first, safety is your priority as a goalkeeper? Yeah. And I absolutely agree with that. That's what you want to see as a fan as well. So when he comes for that, if he's thinking, okay, it's wet, I'm not going to get my hands on it properly, so just do that big Superman style punch that you see keepers do sometimes. No. Send it absolutely flying. Okay, but
this
not?
Is the problem with this is you're right in what you say, that ordinarily you'd have a decision whether it's parry or catch. The problem with this one is there's only one outcome. It has to be a catch. It's too close in for him to parry it outwards, so he has to get hold of this ball. And you can see he's tried to do that and it's just squirmed out of his grasp. It's as simple as that. It is a reasonably basic catch and he should make the catch. Whether it's bad conditions or not, he should make the catch, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, had this been a month ago in dry conditions, or even yesterday or the day before in drier conditions, he makes the save, he makes the catch.
Mm. I just don't know if we can have that as a valid excuse. I know you're saying it's an error, but the ball came in, right? And it is wet, but it came in, cliche, a nice height for a goalkeeper. Mm. He should be catching that with his personalised gloves and the grip that it must have on them, specially designed for him.
It costs £67 million
exactly.
As well.
The gloves do.
They're very expensive.
The personalised gloves don't make too much of a difference, by the way. Having your name okay. on them.
But it's an error. No, it's an error because he should catch that. No questions asked. He should catch that.
I agree. And I'm not disagreeing with the fact it's an error. I ask you this, though. If it's a dry day, does he catch it? Yes, he does. What I'm saying is that the technique, I try and give a good example, but the technique becomes that much more difficult because of the conditions. Now, every goalkeeper listening to this will be nodding along because they'll have had the same thing happen where it's a shot. Now, this is where it's different. If it's a shot from the edge of the box that's going in the corner and it's the same technique in terms of he's diving out and it's a mid-height, then he can parry it around the post. And he probably would have done that in that situation. The fact is he's trying to cut out a cross, so he can't parry. If he parries it, he parries it into the middle. United still score and he still gets criticised. So he has to try and catch the ball, but it is that much more difficult because of the rain.
I'd like to hear, this is a very simple question. Let us know on Twitter or Instagram or drop us an email, hello@goalkeepersunion.net. Do you buy that for a top-level goalkeeper? Top level. Liverpool are going for the Premier League and arguably the Champions League this year. The fact that it's wet has made him make a mistake. And obviously Rich is the expert, but I'm just interested in finding out what people listening at home think. Do they buy that as a legitimate reason? One of my criticisms of Alisson as well is he plays too much from the back. He plays too much with his feet. And I know that's a very sort of anachronistic Luddite's way of looking at things. But as a fan, you want to see a bit of safety sometimes. And there was a moment against Manchester United where Rashford and Lukaku were closing him down. He kind of sidestepped and bent the ball between them out to Andy Robertson at fullback. A lovely pass, and it found Robertson's feet. But it's just too risky. He's outside his far post, he's playing across goal, and I know if it works every time it looks brilliantly, but I just don't think it will. Is there an element of showboating with that kind of stuff?
I don't think it's showboating. I think that every goalkeeper's got a gauge in terms of risk and safety, and I know certainly when I played, I was very much on the safer side of that. You know, I would take the safe option, and my first thought was, I don't want to concede. So that would often mean that I would then go long. The problem with the way in which I played was that I didn't keep possession enough because I was too safe. So I think it's where you are on that gauge. Now, Alisson, of course, he's much more towards the other end. The positive to that is that that particular example you give, the fact that he was successful, he's taken two players out of the game, and now Liverpool can build an attack knowing that two players are completely out of the game. So in the end, it's a very positive result that he's got from that particular moment. But this again comes down to each individual keeper. Now, the perfect goalkeeper would continue to do things like that and continue to execute the technique perfectly. Mm. And in fairness to Alisson, for everything that we spoke about, that's now two errors that he's made. That's all. Two errors. The error with his hands and then one with his feet. That's all it is against Leicester. They came back and won that game as well. So it hasn't necessarily been overly costly. The bit that we can't quantify is how many goals has he, or we probably can quantify, but how many times has his distribution helped Liverpool build attacks? How many shots have come from the fact that he's been so good at distributing the ball? Now, this was something that we had at Brentford. Mark Warburton was our manager. And he basically said this point. He doesn't mind if the goalkeeper gives away five goals a season playing out, because his belief is that we'll score 10 goals from the fact that we play that way. And Liverpool very much have a similar philosophy.
I suppose that just feels very counterintuitive, doesn't it, as a football fan? But that's why we're fans and not players. So I watch Hugo Lloris do it a lot. And I know actually there's an example of him doing it this weekend. And the amount of times, if you go and watch Tottenham, you just hear a low groan of "Hugo," and everybody in the stadium is thinking, what are you doing, as he just gets away with it by the skin of his teeth. But actually, conversely, even if that results in a goal once every 10 games, it's worth it, because that helps the team.
Well, go back to a real simple one, which is, in fact, and this is something that you can see the stats on, is if a goalkeeper goes long every time, if we're going to go to extremes, so if they're going old Wimbledon style and every single goal kick is being punted long, every time they get the ball in their hands, they're punting it long. Let's say they keep possession at best 50-50. Realistically, it's less, because when you're punting it into the strikers, more often than not, defence will win it or it'll go through to the goalkeeper. So you might be talking 30% that you're keeping the ball. Now, I'm sure I saw a stat somewhere where Alisson is in the high 80s, if not in the 90s. Now, even that alone, if you've got one goalkeeper that keeps possession 30% and another goalkeeper that keeps possession 90%, it is as simple as that. And obviously, to keep it 90%, you're going to have to take risks at times.
Is there a sense now, though, that we're almost overplaying out from the back? It's become so fashionable that you see... there were four instances from this weekend, right? You had Jordan Pickford. Yes, it was a poor clearance from Yerry Mina, but it was quite clear that that's not the option that Pickford should have gone to when he played it out from the back, almost vertical from the box to Mina. There was Gaiata, who got caught in possession by Vardy. Goal was disallowed, but arguably maybe shouldn't have been. Hugo Lloris, like Joe has mentioned, he blasted one out from the back because he had a man on him and the Burnley player intercepted it. But there was Martin Dubravka, who was under pressure, played a nice ball out, Newcastle counter-attacked and scored. So there's opposing arguments for it, but I just feel like it's almost a case of overplaying out from the back because it's fashionable.
So what this is now, it's not a technical issue, it's decision-making. So you'll often find where we've gone from 10 years ago that pretty much nobody played out and everything was just going long, going into areas. Now we're going to the other end of the spectrum. And what you often find is it will go to an absolute extreme before we come back and settle somewhere in the middle and you get that blend again. And I feel that we are doing that more so this season. And I think that's Alisson's had an impact on that. Edison has had an impact on that. And in fairness to Alisson and Edison, they're both fantastic at what they do. So goalkeepers now want to mimic that. They know that these two are seen in such, or held in such high esteem, that they are the bench benchmark. And so a lot of goalkeepers are trying things in order to enter that bracket. But of course, then if you don't have the technical prowess that the likes of Alisson and Edison have, then it's going to be difficult. So this then where it comes back to decision making, it also comes back to the type of team you're playing in. Because we need to appreciate that other than Edison and Alisson, you could pretty much say that every goalkeeper in the world, other than maybe Barcelona goalkeeper, you're not playing in a team that can play that way. So of course, if you're playing, you know, goalkeepers listening, if you're playing for your Sunday league team, you're not going to be able to play like Edison and Alisson because the team won't set up in the same way that a Liverpool or a Man City will do. So that then comes back to decision making, and that's the bit that is a little bit questionable at the moment, and certainly goalkeepers are pushing it to an extreme.
Yeah, and there's certain players, aren't there? So, again, using the Spurs example, like Hugo Lloris, if you're playing it out to Jan Vertonghen, yes, fine. But if it's Davinson Sanchez, not so much. It's got to be somebody who's good with the ball at their feet anyway. Speaking of keepers who are good with the ball at their feet, let's talk Bernd Leno.
He has had a tough weekend. Of course, at fault for the third goal. And again, it's another error. For those that haven't seen it, it's a ball crossed in from Shane Long, and in fairness to Shane Long, it is a beautiful cross. It's from the edge of the box and it's just clipped in and it's just tempted Leno. He's gone for it, couldn't quite make it, and it's then meant that it's a free header for Charlie Austin just to put it into an empty net. Now the interesting thing with this is that whether Leno comes or Leno stays, it could end up in a goal. That's the interesting part to it. Now if he stays on his line, he doesn't get blamed. The fact that he comes, it therefore makes it his mistake because it means that Charlie Austin has an open goal. I'm sat somewhere in the middle on this because you don't want to say to goalkeepers not to come, but this comes, again, back to decision-making. The general rule of thumb for goalkeepers, according to the masses, are that if you come, you need to get there. The truth is, if you're going to come 100 times, you might not get there two or three times. It's as simple as that. And I'd much rather a goalkeeper that continually comes and gets the majority of the balls they come for rather than one that didn't come at all.
Our guest this week is currently plying his trade between the sticks down at the Vitality Stadium for Bournemouth. He also played for Portsmouth, Stoke and Chelsea. Asmir Begovic, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. How are you?
I'm good, thank you for having me on, guys.
Thanks very much for coming on, of course. You're one of a trend that we have here on the Goalkeepers Union podcast, goal-scoring keepers. Okay, so we've had Brad Friedel on, Paul Robinson, who actually scored twice, and you've scored as well. Is that a proud moment for a goalkeeper to go up the other end and actually net?
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool moment for sure. One you always remember. Mine was obviously slightly different, very unexpected, very early in the game. Not probably the way you would have drawn it up, but, you know, obviously pretty cool moment that it happened, and want to remember for the rest of my career and life.
You didn't celebrate that. It's one of those moments that you kind of look back and you think, I wish I'd gone absolutely bonkers and just run off celebrating.
No. I get asked that question a lot, actually. But no, generally, I don't tend to show too much emotion on the field. I was always about the next play. So even when I scored, I guess my thing was like, okay, it happened, and it's about getting on with the game. Plenty of time left in the game, so didn't want to get too carried away and just, you know, kept focusing on the rest of the game.
It was a world record as well. It was only 13 seconds. That's quite, I suppose that's one of the things you might look back on in a few years' time as part of your legacy. And do you think that's actually kind of cool?
Yeah, no, I've got the Guinness Book of World Records certificate and everything. So drop that one in there. I will look back at it very, very fondly.
Was it ever mentioned with Artur Buric when you went to Bournemouth, Asmir, that goal?
It wasn't brought up by me, let's put it that way. I didn't mention it to him directly, so it was brought up by someone else. So thankfully that broke the ice, and you know, we laughed about it, and you know, it got out of the way pretty quickly.
Speaking of Bournemouth, you're back on the South Coast. Are you enjoying it? They're not going too badly this season at all, is it?
Yeah, generally, it's been going good. Obviously, my second season here. You know, enjoying working here every day with the other goalkeepers, all my teammates, and everyone at the club. So, you know, things are going well overall. It's been a pretty good year so far. Plenty of games left this year to try and make it a really good season. So, we're very much focused on finishing off well and doing well in the second half of the season.
Yeah, Asmir, I wanted to ask you about the goalkeeping setup at Bournemouth, because I know within the game there's quite a lot made of it being quite an innovative setup at Bournemouth. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
No, we've got a really good group. Obviously, all led by Neil Moss and Anthony White, the goalkeeper coaches. Always looking for ways to push you, to improve you, using all the latest technology and sports science. They're both very highly qualified, very much with the modern way of thinking, and you know, not never forgetting the basics of goalkeeping and making sure we do all the basics right, and never get too tired of doing them. But at the same time, using what we have now and all the things that we have accessible to us, you know, the technology and the information that we have to try and make us better and try and make us learn, using those tools to keep improving our game. So really good group, and it's been, like I said, very enjoyable so far.
Asmi, you had a loan spell there back 2007, I think it was. That was when they were in League One. And it was prior, if I'm right, it's just prior to Eddie Howe coming in, starting that Bournemouth revolution. Have you noticed a huge change from the time you were there on loan to the time that you're now at the club in the Premier League?
Well, I mean, the only thing that stayed the same is the stadium. So that's everything. And even then, I think we had three sides. So one stands, one side's been added. No, everything's completely changed. The club from top to bottom is completely different. Is run in such a professional way, a very high-level way now. Always looking to move it forward. So there's plans to obviously keep moving the club in the right direction and add to what they've done so far and keep improving the infrastructure and make the club, you know, very sustainable and at the highest level for a long time to come. So a lot of things have changed, and it's just been great to see the journey the club has been on.
Keen to get your thoughts on Eddie Howe, of course. There's a lot of positive press about him, and outsiders looking in, it looks like he's a very forward-thinking manager. How's he been like to work under for you?
So far, so good. I mean, one of the reasons I came here, you know, is the sort of manager you're born with and really want to do well for. And, you know, I really enjoy working with him. Like you said, he's one that is very, very intense, wants to work hard every single day and get the best out of his players and push him to keep improving every day. So from that point of view, it's great for me. That's a great way of getting the best out of your career and out of yourself. So definitely someone I enjoy working for.
One of the things that's followed Eddie Howe around for his entire time in the Premier League, because he's done so well, is speculation that he could potentially move on to, in inverted commas, a so-called bigger club. Is that something that you guys pay attention to at Bournemouth, those kind of rumours?
No, I mean, that's something that happens outside of our circle. You know, we focus on our work each and every day. It's tough enough as it is to work at this level, to get the results in every single weekend and every single game. So that is our main focus. We enjoy working with each other. We have a great group, obviously led by the manager, and all the other outside stuff, we leave it to be out there.
Speaking of managers, you work with some big names. Have you been watching Harry Redknapp in the Jungle recently?
You know, I haven't. I have seen bits and pieces. I've seen, you know, I see on social media now and internet. So I've not watched a lot of The Jungle, I have to say. I go to bed quite early, so I haven't seen too much of it.
Yeah. He's been absolutely smashing
it. I hope he wins it, yeah. I know, I like Harry. Always had a great relationship with him, so I hope he wins it.
Do you know, I wanted to ask you about that. You mentioned you go to bed quite early, and I know certainly when I played, there were ways in which you would live your life in order to make sure you're in the best possible state Saturday at 3 o'clock. Do you have a routine in terms of, you know, when you go to bed, your daily routine of what you eat, what you think? Obviously, a lot of young goalkeepers listen to this, and it's these kind of things that they really feed off. Do you have a set routine?
A set routine is tough. I mean, days are different. It all depends on your training schedule and family life and everything else. But I try and do the basics well. I try and get my 8-9 hours of sleep every night. We train really hard, so it's important you get that recovery and do what's right for your mind and your body. And I eat well, I take care of my nutrition, get my body worked on with the people at the club, with my own physio, everyone like that. So I pay a lot of attention and take a lot of pride in making sure I'm trying to be available for every single day in training, for every single match, and hopefully have a long career.
You mentioned, obviously, you worked under Harry and you had a good relationship with him. But I've read that you said the best manager you worked under was Jose Mourinho. Now, you're only with him for a few months, but what was it about Mourinho that you particularly enjoyed?
I just think his personality is someone you really want to work for. His pedigree of what he's won and just the immediate respect you have for him. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. He obviously gave me the opportunity to go to Chelsea, so I'm very grateful for him for that. and I enjoyed it. Unfortunately, it didn't quite work out in the long term as we would have all liked. But even in the short space of time that we worked together, I had a huge amount of respect for him, and I enjoyed as much of it as I could.
Let's talk business. You have the foundation, you have the clothing range. Is it important for players to have that focus away from football?
Yeah, well, I think it is. I think as well, when you get to my age, of course, you start thinking a little bit about post-career things and what you want to get involved in. And, you know, I'm very lucky. I have a really good team around me. I have a very, you know, good fan base as well, which I'm grateful for. So doing things like the Legend Line is really, really cool. And seeing people's reaction to it is a lot of fun. And, you know, like you mentioned, I'm a huge sports nut. So being able to have my own sports podcast and talk all things sport every couple of weeks or so is a lot of fun. It gives me a great experience and insight into a different avenue in life, and potentially something I might pursue on a more serious note in a few years' time, hopefully, when I finish playing. So all these things are different. I think it's important to have a well-rounded life. You know, we have a huge commitment to our game, to our craft, like I mentioned earlier. So when you do have a bit of downtime, when you're on the road, when you're traveling, I always think it's important to kind of challenge yourself and open your mind up to different things, and to keep you as well-rounded as possible. And that's probably where the charity comes in the most. The foundation I've been running for 5 years now, you know, is run by my family, by my mother-in-law specifically. And, you know, that sort of stuff really humbles you. And I feel a great sense of satisfaction to be able to give back and try and inspire the next generation and make a difference, and especially back home in Bosnia, where it's very much needed.
Azmi, you mentioned you're a sports nut. A lot of basketball, baseball chat on your social media. Bit of a random one that I wanted to put to you. The NFL. You're obviously a big NFL fan. I know it's your NFL fantasy team, by the way. How's that going?
It's okay. Average 6-7 so far. Oh. So need a couple of wins in the next couple of game weeks to try and get to the playoffs. NFL fantasy, by the way, of all the fantasy leagues, the most difficult because of all the injuries. The waiver wire, the picking up of players, very, very tough. So, but I enjoy it. I have a lot of fun, you know, with friends. And when you're following, watching the game on a Sunday night, then it's nice to get involved in other ways as well.
Makes a difference, doesn't it? That waiver wire is a killer, by the way. And absolutely, that's where you can win and lose leagues.
Definitely.
A bit of a random one. I wanted to put this to you. We've often discussed, me and my mates have discussed, that NFL is potentially an avenue for goalkeepers or footballers as a post-football career in terms of kicking. Now, do you think that's a realistic possibility that a footballer could potentially go to the NFL and play as a kicker?
I mean, why not? I think Josh Lambeau done it. He's a kicker in the NFL. I've tried doing it in a couple of things. I've done a couple of things for the NFL, and it's actually very difficult to kick an NFL football.
Really?
And it's a completely different technique. So I think it's something potentially to get down, but, you know, get down for in the future and get involved with. But it's a very different craft, so it's not as easy as it may seem.
I wanted to ask you a couple more goalkeeping-specific questions. One on mindset. You know, I'm always really interested when I watch goalkeepers and I watch their body language, and you always come across as being very calm. In fact, you touched earlier in the podcast, you said that, you know, you don't really let too much faze you. Have you always been like that since you were younger, or is that something you've put a lot of work into?
I think it's something that I've definitely developed over the years. I've studied as well. I mean, as you know, Richard, you're always learning, you're a student of the craft, and I think the mindset of a goalkeeper is very, very, you know, tough and different. So you have to be mentally strong, and that's one of the things I worked on from a really early age, to not let things bother myself, you know, get to me even in a negative way or a positive way, and just be as consistent as possible. And it's definitely something you develop as you go throughout your career, and you know, it's something I take pride in. I think the less noise you make as a goalkeeper sometimes is better, and the less people notice you, the better. So I try and just, you know, clock in, clock out, do my job to the best of my abilities each and every day, and take every challenge that comes.
And when it comes to your training, do you kind of separate it in terms of the technical work, tactical, physical, mental? Is it? Do you have like a set routine every single week?
Yeah, of course. It depends, like in your work schedule and the schedule that the manager and everyone puts together. So a lot of it now during the season is trying to work on bits and pieces in your game and trying to improve, of course, but a lot of it is dependent on the next opponent. So you're always working and getting yourself ready for that next game to make sure you're as prepared as possible. Do your homework, do your scouting, talk about what's going on there. But at the same time, keeping on top of your technical ability, keeping on top of your game and your physical side and all the attributes there. So it's very much a combined thing, but I think the biggest focus for us during the season is to make sure we're ready to play each and every game and be ready for that opponent as best as we can.
Just a quick word on Portsmouth again, Asmir. Top of League One, your old club. Good times potentially returning.
I hope so. It's a really good club. Like I said, gave me a chance to come to England and give me a chance to make my career over here. So I wish him nothing but the best, and I hope they get to the big time as soon as possible.
Asmir, we like to finish with a regular feature called The Locker Room. This is a delve into a professional sportsman's life behind the scenes, okay. What it's like with your teammates. It's just a few quick-fire questions. First up, who is your toughest opponent?
Toughest opponent ever would be Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm one of many. I've been very fortunate to play against some of the best players and have a lot of different challenges, but Ronaldo was the one that was probably... No, it seemed like it was impossible to stop, so I go for him.
And the next one, greatest save?
Greatest save. Again, difficult to choose. I don't know. I let that sort of stuff be decided by everyone else. And the one that maybe that sticks out, I always kind of keep mentioning and to people, is a save for Stoke. A few years back against Man United, it was a last-minute save of Wayne Rooney of a free kick, and that kind of won us the game. And it was actually a bit of a turning point in the season, that game for us. So that's one that really sticks out. But, I like to let the fans and everyone decide on these things.
Is there any particular funny teammate moment that you can remember?
That's a tough one. A lot of good memories over the years. I think I've had some really good teammates, a lot of funny teammates. I think the locker room, as you guys have the segment in the show, is just a special environment, a very different environment, and not many things like it, and not many things that prepare you in life for it. So a lot of different experiences. Very difficult to pick one.
Do you know, I always say, when people ask me that, it kind of reminds me of going back to school, because it is, you just turn into kids again. It's a bunch of kids in the playground just doing very childish stuff. Lastly, we always ask goalkeepers this. Can you sum up goalkeeping for you in one sentence?
I think it's the ultimate grind. Do you know what? I think we work on our craft so much. So every single day, it's tough. For us, it's a unique position. It's looked upon sometimes as unimportant. But we love it. The goalkeepers union does exist in my mind. But I think it's the ultimate grind throughout your career. I don't know what you think of it, Richard, but for me, I think it's just a big grind and a lot of work each and every day.
Yeah, and I think you've summed that up pretty well. And in fact, one more, just for the, as mentioned, we have a lot of young listeners. If you were to give your biggest bit of advice for a young goalkeeper that's got aspirations of making it to the pros, what's that bit of advice you'd give?
One thing I would say is to listen to all your coaches and pick something up from everyone. I've had numerous coaches throughout my career, probably taking little bits of pieces of everyone. I think you have monumental stages in your career where certain coaches have a bigger impact than others, maybe ones you work with for longer. But I think it's always important to stay open-minded, learn from coaches, learn something different from other guys. And then obviously as you get older, you mold yourself and mold your own career.
Great stuff.
Awesome. Asmir Begovic, thank you very much for joining us.
No, well, thanks a lot for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Oh, Keeper Capers. On this week's Keeper Capers, we all love a goalmouth scramble. Matt, tell us more.
Yeah, pretty incredible footage coming out from Wingate and Finchley. It was an FA Trophy match with Dulwich Hamlet. Quite the goalmouth scramble. The keeper saved, the defender saved, and the keeper saved again, then the defender saved with his head. Managed to keep it out. Rich, incredible stuff.
Phenomenal. And I think every goalkeeper just wishes they had a defender like the defender in this. And if you haven't seen it, you have to see it. A couple of great saves by the keeper. It's the ultimate goalmouth scramble, but it's the final moment when the ball breaks. It's 2 yards out. The defender's on the floor, doesn't know what to do. How can he possibly keep it out? He just dives head first. Doesn't care about his own safety in order to save the goal. And you can see just how excited the goalkeeper was, and the fans go crazy. Yeah, an epic moment.
It's very 300, isn't it? Like bodies piling up on the line.
It's great. You know, you talk about putting your body on the line and blood and guts and non-league football. I mean, this is why people love it as much as they do. And I get to see plenty of it. And it's fantastic. You know, you can hear the fans can hear the players, everybody's involved. And this moment in particular, you can just hear the excitement in the crowd. It's a brilliant moment.
Oh, keeper capers. Obviously, it's a tough time of year for the postman anyway, with Christmas and delivering presents and spreading so much joy. Well, speaking of spreading joy, we have got an absolute avalanche of correspondence this week, haven't we, Matt? And the postman has been, I mean, he's barely been out of here, isn't he?
Well, this is a lovely bit of correspondence that we've had from Nathan Cusack. Thank you, Nathan. Basically, he's asking about height. Rich, he's 5'10", says I'm 5'10". Rich said on another podcast that 6'2" was ideal. I've got into playing 11-a-side very late. He says he's aged 34 after playing years of 5-a-side and 7-a-side. I've done okay considering having reached the 12th tier of football and played pretty well, even though I do say myself. I didn't try for years, having always thought I was too short. What do you think is the shortest a goalkeeper can be at professional level?
Oh, it's a good question.
Who's the smallest keeper? I can't think of anyone particularly tiny.
No, I mean, goalkeepers in time gone past. Fabian Barthez.
Campos was about 5'6". He actually references Steve Death, who was a goalkeeper at Reading, who was 5'7".
Yeah. Do you know what? One of the most difficult things now isn't necessarily about how effective a goalkeeper can be, because the height doesn't actually make that much of a difference. When you look at a goalkeeper's game over the course of a season, how many crosses they come for successfully, how many saves they make, the types of saves, where they're making the saves. So a lot of it, the height is actually irrelevant to an extent. If you've got power, spring, good feet, then whether you're 6'5" or 5'5", you should still catch the majority of crosses that you come for. The biggest problem is the fact that a lot of clubs now, of course, you're going to have a slight natural advantage being a certain height. So what ends up happening is that clubs, when they recruit, they only recruit goalkeepers of a certain size. So it's not necessarily, you could be the best 5'5" goalkeeper in the world, but no one's going to look at you, unfortunately, while the game is as it is. Now, the good news is that things are improving when it comes to the stats. That's what, in my opinion, is going to help smaller goalkeepers, because then managers will see which goalkeepers are the most effective goalkeepers. It won't be necessarily about how they look.
But if you're 5'5", you're not going to make a fingertip save from a free kick that's going into the top corner, right? You're just physically not able
to. No, do you know what, you say that, and I'll say this, and I've spoke to the guy that I'm going to talk about, Espen Bardsson. Now, you might remember him. He was, of course, Tottenham. He came to Watford. Now, Espen was 6'5", very good goalkeeper, retired young, but his strength was more in how calm he was, a very intelligent goalkeeper, but certainly didn't have a great deal of spring. So I knew when we did shooting exercises, I felt that I could get to the top corner a lot easier than he could. Now I'm 5'11/6 foot on a good day, and he's 6'5". You know, so I think that, look, if you've got someone like a Ben Foster or some of these goalkeepers, a David De Gea, and you've got, I mean, by the way, David De Gea is not huge. We're talking 6'2". But if you've got 6'4" and you've got power and you can get down quickly and you can move and your biomechanics are very good, then of course that's going to give you an advantage. The truth is, the bigger you are, then often you're not quite as quick as maybe someone who is 5'8", 5'9". So you gain in certain areas, but then you lose in others. Courtois, good example. There's certain areas he's very strong with the size that he has, but also there's certain areas that he's a bit weak. The question then comes down to the manager. What does the manager want from a goalkeeper? I actually wrote a piece a few years ago on the Schmeichel effect, and my belief that a lot of managers from days gone by, they wanted a Peter Schmeichel in goal because he was such an iconic figure at the time, and the idea that you had this safe, big mountain of a man in goal was very much what a lot of coaches wanted in a goalkeeper. But the truth is, how many 6'4", 6'5" goalkeepers have the attributes that Peter Schmeichel had? Not a lot. So this then comes back to being effective. I mean, part of what we're doing here, obviously, with this podcast, with this website, is to increase the knowledge. I think the more knowledge there is in goalkeepers, fans, outfield players and fans will start to understand what makes an effective goalkeeper, because ultimately, it, in my opinion, it doesn't matter whether you're 5'8" or 6'8", it comes down to how effective you are at keeping the ball out of the net, distributing the ball, how good you are on crosses, your intelligence, the way you live your life, nutrition, the tactical side, the physical side, all of these tiny attributes. It doesn't necessarily matter how tall you are, but it will do, while recruitment is still very much that you have to be 6'4".
There is actually another note from Nathan. Mm-hmm. Now, Rich, you're going to need to confirm some of this news. I'll just read it out to you. He said, I wanted to bring up a strange connection I have with Richard Lee.
Okay.
I'm a Watford fan, and in the late noughties, I was at the University of Hertfordshire doing a paramedic science degree. I had friends on the course who happened to be staying at a house Richard rented out to students.
Ah, yeah.
In brackets, he says, incidentally, I stayed there a few times and saw Richard's inspirational to-do list. I think it was up on the toilet door. What's going on here, mate?
Yeah, I had a house that I rented out to students.
Rich, what is your to-do list? Because they're living there. Why have you left your to-do list in there?
I must have left it there. Yeah, I rented out a house and I rented it out furnished. And I was in Hatfield.
Just thanks for the detail.
Well, no, that's furnished. Where I'm... No, if anybody's interested, let me know. No, I must have left certain things there, apparently. If there was a to-do list, I must have just missed it. Because I left, obviously, all the beds and stuff like that. So maybe I just missed it. But yeah.
Please, please, if your friends have anyone can remember what's on that to-do list, please send it in.
I used to do some on that. And I've always kind of lived that way. Like, have you ever seen the film About a Boy?
Yes.
And there's a reason to this. He talked about having units of time and the way that he broke up his day. Now, his day, he broke up with like a haircut and other bits and pieces. I used to do that, though. And that actually, you'll find a lot of footballers do this, where they'll have a Monday to Sunday and they'll break the day into hours or a couple of hours. And then when they do their training, their physical training, their tactical, their technical. So I used to then train in the morning, come home, have a little power nap, and then I'll train again in the evening. And I then created a goal at that particular house. I created a goalkeeping gym. So in a garage, a double garage, I then put AstroTurf on the floor, had a crash mat, had bungee cords to then work on my power, had a reaction machine. So yeah, I used to really take that part of it quite seriously.
You were living alone at the time, I'd imagine.
There is actually... He said that you offered free tickets to games, so you're responsible, by the way. I know. He said you offered free tickets to Watford games because he was a Watford fan. He got one. And the game that he went to was, I don't know whether you played in this, it was the game against Reading, where there was that infamous ghost goal. Do you remember that?
I was in the squad. I didn't play. Scott Loach played. And yeah, I was in the squad, yeah.
So that's what you've done for him, mate. You gave this guy. Amazing. Thank you, Nathan.
Yeah, cheers, Nathan. If you want to get in touch with us,
random,
it's easy to do so. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net, at GK Union on Twitter, search GK Union on Facebook, or at GK Union Official on Instagram. Right, that is it for this week's Goalkeepers Union podcast. Thank you very much to Matt Beadle.
Thank you.
Thank you to the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Thank you.
Thank you to all of you for listening as well. Please do keep getting in touch, downloading, subscribing, and review it as well. If you like it, we'll see you next time. It's the Goalkeepers Union podcast in association with GK Icon.